Hey, everybody. On this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, we talk with Compass Box's Karen Igalka. Compass Box is a boutique blender, and that word kind of sounds fancy, but essentially, for years, you've got your standard blends that tend to be your daily drinkers when it comes to scotch. And there's a lot of stereotypes and negative perspective towards blended whiskey. Compass Box bucks all perception of that. They really do put greater care and attention and go the extra mile with the products that they produce. A lot of much older stock. They're also very transparent with their products. You can actually, if you ask or if it's on the box, they got in trouble for it, which we'll get into in this week's episode. But they're very transparent as to what they're doing, so they're not trying to deceive you. And they go above and beyond with proof, with packaging, the whole nine yards. So Compass Box is one of the, I don't know, I wouldn't say they're necessarily the first, but they're one of the better, well-known, and well-respected blenders in the market today that produce really, really good, highly coveted whiskey. And if you are a bourbon drinker and you're looking to get into scotch, or if you're only a single malt drinker and are interested, Compass Box is definitely the way to dip your toes in it. They are not sponsoring this episode. They didn't pay me to say any of that. I'm just a big fan of the product. This week's episode is, however, sponsored by Benriach 10, which I'm about to kill this bottle. Give me a second here. Benriach 10 and Balcones. Now, as you remember, we had Balcones on a couple weeks ago. We talk a little bit about that episode in this week's episode. Balcones is one of the, I'd say they're easily the largest grain of glass whiskey producer in Texas and one of the most well-respected. So Balcones and Benriach are the sponsors for today's episode. And I wanted to mention, as my producer Jack always likes to remind me, iTunes. This show, we get a lot of traffic on Facebook, but this show is on iTunes. It's on Google Play. It's on YouTube. We are on every channel. Plus, you can get us on 94.1 FM on Saturdays at noon, as well as our website at mywhiskeyneat.com. The show is on every platform you can think of. So iTunes, Google Play, mywhiskeyneat.com, and also, what else did you want me to mention? That was it? I think that covers it. I think we're good. All right, guys. Without further – well, actually, I've been told people are tired of hearing me say without further ado, but I don't know what to say next. So how do you segue into that? Screw it. Without further ado, Karen Igalka with Compass Box and me. Thanks, guys. Actually, before we get started, there's one more thing I wanted to mention. Can you still hear me this far away from the mic? I wanted to try something this week that I think is important. And I think it's important for us to talk about two things. Who's coming up next? And I want to actually make a recommendation to you guys. We are often, as consumers, at some point faced with marketing. That's the number one thing, the very first thing that we get hit with anytime we pick. So before we start this week's episode, I wanted to try a segment called Buy This, Not That. So this is probably going to upset some people, but there's a product. And actually we have Mark Schilling coming on the podcast in a couple of weeks to talk about Texas Fakers. We also have Ranger Creek. Their owners are coming on the podcast in a few weeks to talk about the brands in the Texas market that like to play on your pride for Texas but are actually not from Texas. So there's nothing wrong with sourcing product. Many products in this world and many distilleries will source products from out of state. Totally fine. There's nothing wrong with it. As long as it's a good product and as long as it tastes good, there's nothing wrong with it. But there are products out there that are subpar, sourced, and try to manipulate you with overly patriotic Texas logos and designs on their label to make you think that you're supporting a Texas brand. And there's a product called 1835 Bourbon. This is a big specs push. Many people like it. It's $20. It's very reasonably priced, and it's not a bad product. But it's a – when anytime you source product, you're now having to go through another layer of money, meaning it's going to be inherently more expensive. So in order to hit a price point, you get – not necessarily cheaper quality bourbon, but I'll say this. 1835 bourbon is a sourced product from out of state. It's not made here. It's only bottled here. And it plays on the Texas logo. It's got a picture of a cannon on it. Very Alamo-centric. It's $20. Instead of buying that, I highly encourage you to buy Ezra Brooks 7-year-old 101 proof bourbon for the same price. Ezra Brooks is sourced from Heaven Hill, but it's a 7-year-old 101 proof product. It's a much better product for $20. It's the same price, better source. You're getting it from Heaven Hill, and it's just a much better bourbon. So if you're going to buy something in the $20 range, I recommend Ezra Brooks over 1835. That's my recommendation. Sourcing's not necessarily bad, but anyways, now we can go to the show. All right, guys, see you later. I've always wondered this about the brands, and every brand does things a little differently. How do you guys maintain success? Like, how do you gauge success?
Interview question.
It's
growth for us, yeah.
Right, but you don't have like a case quota or a. Is it just?
I mean, we do on our signature range and our Great King Street for sure. We definitely do.
So you do try to like move a certain amount,
yeah.
Because
Big
brands like Beam or
we're not there.
They don't have that. They don't have like a quote. Am I yelling? No, it feels like I'm yelling. No, they don't have like a.
Quotas,
you got to move.
Goals.
So it's all about footprint. And I'm like, okay, well, you're.
Well, it's either distribution or volume. So you're either going to be looking for to increase your distribution. So for a small brand like us that, you know, we spend $0 on advertising. Zero.
I mean, you spend a few dollars.
This is it. This is all of our advertising. Hi, guys. This is our advertising. No, we spend exactly like zero budget on advertising on purpose.
And you really don't have to. Compass Box is pretty well known in the Scotch world, especially on the higher end stuff. You know, people really. And I'm not trying to fluff you up.
I'll take it.
Because you guys aren't actually sponsoring this episode. I'm a big fan of the brand.
Oh, we can sponsor. No.
Yeah. No. So, I just heard what your marketing budget was. So.
Right, exactly.
No, you guys have covered the gamut of your reasonably priced blends. And then you kind of, and I've said this before, you guys have kind of sloughed off any perception or negative perception or stereotype when it comes to blends. You guys are doing like really big things with really high quality whiskeys, really old whiskeys too.
Yeah.
So like even the, so there was, for those listening and don't know, Compass Box has always been very, very, very transparent. They try to put as much information on the bottle as possible, as much information in the packaging. And there was actually a bit of controversy because over in Scotland, you're not allowed to mention the age of a whiskey unless it's the youngest age in the bottle. The reason for that being you don't want to buy a whiskey that says it's 40 years old when there's a drop of 40-year-old whiskey in it and the rest is like 5-year-old whiskey. So you guys, in the midst of trying to be honest and transparent, kind of got in a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, for sure.
What was the blend that got you in trouble?
It was actually because we had released the ages of our Flaming Heart, our last edition of Flaming Heart, that had got us in trouble. And it's because we've always, since I've been at the company for over the 3.5 years, and ever since I've started, we've talked about the ages in our marketing materials, like just in our, you know, sell sheets and things like that, and on the website. And then, there was an anonymous complaint. From what I understand, there's an anonymous complaint to the Scotch Whiskey Association that we were revealing all of the ages in the blend. Now, the spirit of the law, this Scotch Whiskey Association law, is so that it's for the consumer's benefit, so that the consumer is not getting hoodwinked by, oh, there's 45-year-old whiskey in there, when in reality it's an eyedropper full in the whole demijohn. But we were kind of doing the opposite of that, which is being fully transparent and saying, oh, there's, you know, 15% of this and, you know, 16% of this and 15% of this, so that there was no way that the consumer would be hoodwinked, like the exact opposite. They would be fully aware. But technically, it's against the law. So we were told we had to take the ages off. And, you know, in response to that, we released a whiskey called 3-Year-Old Deluxe.
Yeah, that was the big middle finger to the Scotch.
A little bit. It's more of a tongue-in-cheek kind of.
Okay, sure, sure. But what was the, so what's the story there? It's called 3-Year-Old Deluxe.
It's 3-Year-Old Deluxe.
But how much 3-Year-Old whiskey was in it?
0.4%.
0.4, not even a full 1% was, so as opposed to the liars who would put an eyedropper of 40-Year-Old whiskey and call it 40.
Right.
You guys put an eyedropper of 3-Year-Old
whiskey. Exactly. And it's actually 3-Year-Old whiskey that we made ourselves. So it's the first, it was the first whiskey that we've actually made ourselves, you know, like
I didn't know that you guys had your own
distillery. We don't. We were at, it's at a different distillery, but we chose the casks and everything. So we're putting new make in our own cask.
Gotcha.
So it's kind of a special, the 3-Year-Old whiskey is a little bit special to us for that reason. But what's funny about it is that's the world's oldest 3-Year-Old whiskey. Or the world's most expensive 3-Year-Old whiskey. So it's kind of, a little tongue-in-cheek with that.
What were the ages in it? So if it's 0.04% or 0.4.
Yeah, so it was...
less than half a percent, right?
Less than... Yeah, it was either... It's either 0.6 or 0.4. I believe it's 0.4. But less than 1% of 3-Year-Old whiskey. And then the remainder is... It's about 9.6% 20-Year-Old Talisker.
Talisker is fantastic.
And then
Talisker isn't talked about enough. It's one of those brands, beautiful packaging, but not over the top, not gimmicky. And it's not, I don't see it in enough people's home bars. I'd love to see it more.
I'm going to put a pin in that. I liked Talisker a lot as a distillery. Yeah. And I think that a lot of it is muddied by things like Talisker Storm. But I really, really like their kind of pure expressions a lot.
You said 20-Year-Old Talisker?
So, yeah, 20-Year-Old Talisker and 24-Year-Old Kleinleash.
Okay.
That's the bulk of it. That's 90%. So that's the bulk of it is 24-Year-Old whiskey. So it's the oldest and the most expensive 3-Year-Old whiskey. So it's this beautiful round, ethereal honey appley whiskey that has just a touch of peat on it, and then this little bit of sprightly character that comes from our 3-Year-Old whiskey.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. I actually had a taste of it over at there's a local place here that I've been supporting for years called Federal.
Oh, Federal Grill?
Yeah.
Here's my plug. I'm doing a dinner with them in September after the...
Yeah, well, let me know, and we kind of maintain an email list of people who want to know about it.
Yeah,
events.
Cool.
So we...
It was supposed to be this week, but between Derby and...
too much going on.
And Mother's Day, it was just too much. But yeah, we're doing it the... I believe it's the Sunday after Whiskies of the World.
Yeah. And that wasn't
Houston.
A setup. I didn't know
it
that
was
she
not.
Had a
dinner. That's why I'm. That's why I'm. You know, pretty excited about that. Yeah. No.
So I'm a huge fan, and we actually, and I'm not. I wouldn't say I'm a tasting expert by any means, but we were there for one of our events. I think we helped launch. Well, we did the consumer launch of, in air quotes, of the Glenfiddich IPA cask.
Oh,
and,
fun!
And that night, Peter over at Federal just kind of brought me a blind sample of something, and I nailed it in two tastes.
No way!
Yeah. So I guessed I could nail, you know, it's clearly scotch and not bourbon or anything else, right? And then just something about it reminded me of Compass Box, and it was a complete lucky crapshoot, and I nailed it, and I loved it. It was a great pour.
That's very gratifying. I like that.
So, 3-Year-Old whiskey.
3-Year-Old whiskey, yeah.
And there's not much of that left. You guys aren't doing that again.
Oh, no. So anytime – so we have three ranges. So we have our Great King Street range, which is our kind of workhorse. It's what we're actually going to be creating. You guys are going to be able to choose a barrel – select a barrel from our Great King Street single Marion casks. The Great King Street range is our most expensive whiskey to make, the whiskey we make the lowest margin on, and it's our workhorse. Yeah, number one. Then we have our signature range, which are things that you can always kind of get your hands on, so like our Hedonism, Spice Tree, Peat Monster – and then we have our limited editions, and we release those, and then they're gone. Once they're gone, they're gone. It's like smoke them if you got them.
So you mentioned our thing. What we're doing locally, for those listening, we're doing a barrel. Our group consumes barrels faster than we can put out. We're a very thirsty group.
You guys are like Donkey Kong. You just take the barrels and throw them.
So, but it has nothing to do with. I don't think it has anything to do with hype or. fodder, chaff. It has more to do with the fact that you've got a group of 3,300 people in a barrel.
3,300 people?
Yeah, yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, yeah. Our group is the largest single market group in the nation, and it's the vast majority of it is Houston-based, and then you've got some North Texas, and yeah, that's... The group is big.
And you're worried about going through 100 cases of something?
Yes. Because here's the thing. So the group is primarily bourbon focused. Let me back up. So barrels only yield so much.
Yeah.
And we did a Jack Daniel's barrel that was released last weekend, and we all 170 bottles were gone in 4 hours. So the thought is, oh yeah, we can do anything, but there's still some hesitation because
right,
you
with
don't
Scotch,
want
right.
Yeah, well, with anything.
Okay.
You don't want a store to take on too much
and then have them sit on it.
So, I don't want to burn them, but I also want to give the group as much as possible. So, what we're doing is we've had some interest in doing a Scotch cask for a while, and the idea of doing a Great King Street, but we're doing it at batch strength. So I think you had said something around 48, 49.5, almost 100 proof, which is a great thing for bourbon drinkers. They're a big fan of that.
Oh, it's badass.
And then we're doing a finish. So, the samples are sitting on a table for those who can't see. We'll be there's a few people in the group that we've kind of nailed down as like core everyday members that the entire six barrel series is going to be centered around the movie Reservoir Dogs. So we're doing a Mr. Pink, a Mr. White, a Mr. Brown. So a barrel of different brands. There'll be some bourbons, some scotch.
Mr. Red.
Yeah, yeah. There is no Mr. Red, but there is a Mr. Pink, and that's kind of pink. So we might be able to pull that off.
Okay.
So that's what we're doing here. So I'm excited about doing that. I've had the Glasgow blend.
No, the Artist Blend.
The Artist Blend. Yeah. I've had Great King Street, the Artist Blend, but not...
Let's start with. Do you want to start with Artist Blend? So that's the
non-peated.
Artist Blend is our unpeated. It's kind of like our penicillin whiskey. So have you heard of the penicillin cocktail?
Right.
Okay. So Sam Ross created this in the year 2005. Little bar called Milk and Honey, using our Asilo whiskey, which is like a really light floral, almost like Japanese style whiskey. If you're not thinking about Scotch,
it's very sweet.
Honey. And it's mixed with honey syrup, ginger syrup, fresh lemon juice, and then a rinse of Peat Monster on top. So we kind of created this whiskey for that. You know, it's a little bit higher in proof than Asilo.
As the base.
Yeah, it's a little bit higher in proof than Asilo. It's a little bit higher in malt than Asilo, so that it can stick up with some dilution. You've got 55% malt in there. And then we do this marrying cask method. So basically we have four different whiskeys that go into this bottle. A grain whiskey, a malt whiskey, that's been aged in our hybrid casks, and a sherry cask whiskey.
Okay, that's what I was picking up. I was picking up some phenolic, slight smokiness to it, but I know it's not peated.
Right.
But sherry imparts that phenolic...
Just a little
undertone,
bit, yeah.
So there's, it's incredibly, the nose is all honey. And this is actually pretty reasonably priced. It's
It's going to be on shelves for about $30 to $34 a bottle.
And that's part of the complaints that people have when you get into whiskey, that the differentiation between bourbon and scotch is bourbon's just so much cheaper. But when you can find mid-30 range scotch,
At this quality,
it's a win-win.
When you taste, I like tasting this one because it's a crowd pleaser. It's like, you know.
Yeah, I don't see anyone hating this.
Cheap and cheerful, really easy to drink, even better to mix with. It's sticks up kind of against any dilution, any cocktail. But when you blind taste the Glasgow blend, the complexity on it is just bananas. Not ice, by the way. I say that all the time. I say bananas. And it's not a tasting note. I just say bananas instead of crazy.
Right.
But I'll be giving these presentations, and I'm like, guys, you know, this one's bananas. And then you'll have some guy that's like, I get banana. You're right. It's like this creamy banana. And it's just super awkward for everyone in the room that gets that what I'm talking about.
Right.
Bananas.
Well, no, I definitely don't taste bananas. When it comes to that core Scotch profile, it's honey and floral and like light fruits, like pears. It's very, very sweet, syrupy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's hitting all those notes.
Yep.
A little water.
So yeah, 43%, 43% alcohol in the on both of these.
It actually drinks little a little higher. I would have expected 45, like a little bump. 43 is lower than I expected.
Really?
But it's really good.
And that, do you want to know why? It's because you're used to tasting things like some of the bigger brands that are named after people, which I won't, you know, mention. But and those
guys named Johnny.
Yeah, they tend to have half as much malt in there. So you're going to, it's going to be very, very young grain whiskey that you're tasting, and it kind of almost tastes diluted. So even though it will be at, you know, 40%, it drinks like it's much less than that. So yeah. So when you taste something of ours, it's 43%. Because there's so much malt content in there, it kind of almost bumps up the flavor profile.
What's the peated component in this?
17% Lafroig.
Oh, I'm a big Lafroig fan.
Oh, yeah.
I've been preaching the good word of Lafroig for quite some time.
This one is the one I was telling you is kind of like, it has like the texture of maple syrup. Not the flavor of maple syrup, but like texture
like
of maple syrup.
Like a real thick, viscous.
The viscosity on it is out of control. I'd say bananas, but I'm going to try to stop saying that. that's my New Year's resolution, stop saying bananas. 17% Lafroig, 35% sherry cast Benrenis, 66% malt in total. So the highest malt content of any blended Scotch whiskey on the market right now.
It's interesting.
So yeah, like I said, you get the peat right away, you get the sherry right away.
It's I hate to say the word complex because I feel like it's a shortcut to saying I'm confused. Like when not everybody, when a lot of people say it's very complex, they know what they're talking about. But when I say it's complex, it's because they can't put it into words. I initially get hit by the peat, but then like immediately hit the sherry notes, and it's just this.
What's fun for me about this whiskey is I always say complex. It's complex as well, so maybe I'm an idiot. But
no.
It's fine.
Complex
but
is an accurate word.
The reason I say it is I say it relatively. So I say this: the complexity is crazy for a $30 whiskey.
Right.
So you know you expect something like this at a $65, $70 price point, but for bang for your buck, you know.
I would wholeheartedly agree because typically, and again, not to mention any particular names, but there's some standard on the shelf $40 peated blends that maybe have a black label that are very, yes, you get the smoke, but it's very one note and it's very straight and it's fine. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. Actually, it's one of the only colored labels of theirs that I enjoy.
Oh, I drink it at hockey games. I'm a big hockey fan, so I drink it.
Absolutely.
Love it.
This, however, really is so much more layered. There's a lot more happening in the glass, especially on the nose. And I'm excited to do something with it, especially at a higher proof.
Higher proof and that extra layer of potentially sherry. I just think it's a home run. You get a ton of little Christmassy notes on it.
Oh yeah, that's good.
Do you want to taste it?
I'm doing
right
my
now?
Own Compass Box blend over here in this glass.
Yeah.
Let me rinse.
We're gonna call
this.
You Chris Glazer.
I'm gonna give it a quick rinse and then yeah, let's
just because it's here, right?
Yeah. Let's taste the one that was sight unseen.
Yeah. Okay. That one is this guy. I kind of want you to taste this one just because it's the like souped up version of the one
of
you just had.
Yeah, oh, that sounds awesome.
So just right, we'll do that. Just a little splash. There you go. We won't tell
the guys.
Yeah, we won't tell. Oh, wait. Shoot.
she committed to not cussing
I'm
today.
I'm trying really hard.
This is bananas.
But
yeah.
Now that neat is lovely in a highball. It's crazy too, because the little bit of water opens it up.
There's more sherry influence on this. A little bit more, less. The peat's not as pronounced.
It's more integrated.
Correct. Yeah, yeah. This one, when I said layered, I mean it really felt like separate components. I hit the peat, then this, like with this together,
it's like hopscotch.
They seemed like they were fully.
It's been married. It's been resting in that cask for an additional 2 years.
I'd be happy with that. And that's the 49.5?
Yeah.
I'd be happy with that.
That might be actually a touch higher because it's we took him out before the casks are finished. So it might be like 49.8 and it's going to land at 49.5.
The bourbon group is called a bourbon group, but it's basically a booze group. Everything that spends time in a barrel, we're huge fans of rum. There are some peat heads. And that's where my apprehension comes from because there are less Scotch drinkers in the group and Scotch barrels yield more. That's where my nervousness is.
Yeah,
is
of
we
course.
We want to make sure we don't want to take on 600 bottles of something if we can't move it. But I've been, dude, Laphroaig has made, I would argue that Laphroaig's doing better in Houston than ever before. They're killing it, and people are happy with it.
Yeah, I think that whiskey, the peat is not super pronounced. You get it. You get a hint of it, but it's kind of like a drinkable peat.
Both are incredibly drinkable.
Oh, and then this is
very
the one.
Happy with it.
This is the one that I believe is going to the great state of Rhode Island. Hi, Liam.
You know, I looked at our metrics. So the stuff that funnels through our website gives us more specific metrics as like actual cities. So we've got like pockets in Alaska.
Alaska.
Yeah, middle of the country, some in the California area. Nothing in the Northeast, like New York or.
All right, yeah. It's happening. It's me. That's my jam. We'll see if it spikes after I.
We did an episode a couple weeks ago with, and I was going to tell you this morning, but we kind of caught each other late. We did an episode a couple weeks ago with this really, really important guy from NASA.
Oh, I heard that. This is the one I listened to this morning.
Oh, so you did listen to
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
So that episode, I posted in a bunch of Flat Earth groups. Like NASA.
Oh, cool.
But not just Flat Earth groups. I posted it in a couple like controversial NASA conspiracy groups. And are you able to look it up from there?
Yeah.
I'm almost positive. I think we're fastly approaching 10,000 views. Just on that one video, and there's nothing controversial in it that would.
But
that,
you just kind of.
I just wanted
them.
I thought it'd be funny to like troll a little bit. Yeah, what's the. What does it say?
10,000 views.
Is it up to 10 now?
Yeah, 9.6.
That's our number one episode by far. It was a lot of fun. It was so much fun that we learned so much. So this is, and this one's, what's the difference here?
That one, it was extra matured in our hybrid oak casks, and it's not peated. So it's.
That's really good as well. That's way more oak influence. I wanted to ask you the difference you had mentioned before, the Oak Cross. I don't know much about the Oak Cross,
sure.
But I know that Hedonism is y'all's.
So yeah, Hedonism was the first whiskey we ever made, arguably the first blended grain Scotch whiskey on the market. I will actually participate in this guy.
Yeah.
This is my, you know, holy grail, I guess. Hedonism, first whiskey we ever made, or John ever made, 100% blended grain Scotch whiskey. Ages range from 17 to 25, given the batch. So quite old grain whiskeys, extra matured in first fill ex Buffalo Trace casks. So it's kind of like a Scotch that thinks it's a bourbon.
It's Hedonism also, I think, does pretty well here. You guys have done it. Is it three different Hedonisms? No, there was a flip.
We did Hedonism Maximus.
Right, and then the Muse.
We did Hedonism Quindecimus.
Okay.
We did Hedonism. We did a whiskey for Burns Steakhouse in Tampa called Burns Blend. That was 100% grain. And then, yeah, we've just released Hedonism the Muse. Very, very small run of bottles. Under 3,000.
What's the difference there between the...
Just Hedonism the Muse was a parcel of grain whiskey that our assistant whiskey maker, Jill Boyd, had come across. And it was just this inspirational whiskey. You know, this thing that just spoke to her. And she's like, I want to build a whiskey around this parcel. And the average age, or the oldest whiskeys in there are over 40 years old, so real, real old. So obviously a very small production since there's not a whole lot of that stuff kicking around. But really beautiful whiskey. It ends up being, I think it's 50.
I don't want to empty this out.
Oh, it ends up being about 50, over 50, I think it's 50.3%. You're going to have to quote me on that.
Yeah,
but,
just about, yeah.
But it's the exact amount of – there's 15 people in our company, and 8 out of 15 are women. And so whatever 8/15 is, that's the proof. That's the alcohol percentage.
Y'all nailed it down. Okay,
yeah.
So
– so it just do 8 divided by 15, and that's the proof.
A little over one half.
Yeah, so it's 50 point.
Yeah, 53%. 8 divided by 15?
Yeah.
Point
I guess it's 50. Yeah, so I guess it's 53.3. So that's the proof.
That's
on,
a nice little nod.
Exactly. At our, it was actually released around International Women's Day. So it was kind of a, you know, a lot of people lumped it in with Jane Walker.
Yeah.
Because they released something around then as well. But it's a very different whiskey from that.
Right. Well, I also think that there was some controversy around Jane Walker because it felt pandering and insulting. And I don't think the muse quietly nodding at the women in the company by making a proof that, but I didn't know that. Like,
right.
It wasn't the forefront of your marketing thing.
And again, we don't do any advertising, so this is not. It's just kind of like an internal little Easter egg.
Correct. Yeah. It's a bit more less insulting than.
I don't think I've come across anyone who's been insulted by this whiskey, except for the fact that they can't get their hands on one.
And I'm sure there's plenty of those people.
Which
too.
that's been a bit of a. This is my cross to bear.
So Hedonism has always been my favorite of your core line.
Mm.
But it's been a close fight between that and Peat Monster.
Well, what's funny about Hedonism is that, especially if your guys are big bourbon heads, I mean, anytime I drink bourbon, I don't drink scotch, I kind of nudge this bottle in their direction because it's like a scotch whiskey that appeals to a bourbon drinker. I mean, because at the end of the day, it's grain whiskey. It's been extra matured in first fill ex Buffalo Trace casks. So you get all that bourbon note on grain whiskey. It takes on the...
It's very sugar heavy. Very sweet.
It takes on the character of whatever you put it in. So it's kind of like a chameleon. So grain scotch whiskey is quite neutral off the still. And then if you put it in whatever barrel, it's going to kind of take on that character. So you're getting kind of a scotch, a bourbon flavored scotch.
Right.
Which is kind of...
It's a win-win.
It's like very meta, you know.
And then the difference here with the Oak Cross.
So Oak Cross and Spice Tree are, they're like brothers. Now, we do know chill filtering, no artificial coloring, as I'm sure you can tell in the variants of this. But you can see just in the two colors, the difference in coloration of Oak Cross versus Spice Tree, they're quite different. Oak Cross kind of sprouted out of Spice Tree. So Spice Tree was created because John wanted to create a whiskey that had some char influence on it, but not a fully charred barrel. I'm going to have you taste this one first, even though, just because I'm talking about it,
Just a splash.
Yep. I wish I had little pourers on here, but...
Can't wait to get to quite a few more things to get to.
I know. I'm sorry.
No, you're good. No, I want to drink it, but I learned last week with Fred and AJ that it's probably best to not drink
I'm
all
gentle,
six bottles.
I'm gentle. I won't do that to you.
Yeah, you're fine. These guys not only these guys, their thing is like to be the condescending, you know, make fun of you.
That's so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm from New York, so that would be a great.
They're the type of guys that you'd kind of, you know, you take them out to a pub and you guys are giving each other a hard time the whole time.
Okay. So are they Scottish? Because that's a big
No, but they drink
big,
that way.
Yeah.
This is great.
Yeah, so that's Spice Tree. So Spice Tree, basically, John wanted to create a whiskey that had some char influence on it, but not a fully charred barrel. So what he did is he took this Bordeaux winemaking technique. He sourced some new French oak from the Vosges forests in France, cut that into staves, charred those staves, and lined the ex-bourbon cask with these staves. So it was like a barrel within a barrel.
Right.
That's what gave it this like beautiful layered kind of spice, cardamom, clove notes.
Darker.
Yeah. We released that and the Scotch Whiskey Association, our best friends, said that it couldn't technically be called a scotch because it had that fourth component to a barrel.
Right.
So instead of being just the barrel, the hoop, and the heads, it also had those inner staves. So that was a fourth component. So we had to take – there's only three people in the company at the time. We had to take the whiskey off the market and kind of re-jigger it. So what John ended up doing was taking those inner staves and gluing them to the heads of the cask. So actually making them part of the barrel heads.
Yeah.
So we kind of created this Frankenstein cask that's an ex-bourbon body with charred new French oak heads. So that's how we make it to this day. It actually had to rest in that barrel for an additional 6 months to get the same oak exposure that it was getting from those oak staves. I tend to describe this, it's not the right thing, particularly because we don't really talk about competitors or anything like that, but I kind of think of it as a Macallan and a Rittenhouse rye had a love child.
I'll give you the nod at Macallan. It's a much more deeper sweetness to it. I know we mentioned where this has got kind of that light honey, that light floral notes to it. This to me is more like that raw honey, that more deeper sweetened sugars, you know? and I know so far I've said they're all great, but I genuinely enjoy the brand. My tongue's numb. Spice Tree's great. That was one of the first ones I got started on. I never went and bought a bottle of Asylum, but I went straight from Spice Tree to Peat Monster. Then I got one of those sample kits in.
Oh, yeah.
And had all the little
How
tubes
good are
in
those?
It. They're a lot of fun.
They're gone now.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, I think that was a one-run thing.
Yeah. Yeah. They were great, though.
And then Hedonism.
So Spice Tree, which is kind of like our illegal whiskey, if you will, so spawned this brother, Oak Cross. So Oak Cross, maybe we can taste in a second.
Did you glue a cross to the head of a...
No. It's exactly the same whiskey. It's slightly lower alcohol percentage, but the heads of the barrel, instead of being these super charred new French oak, they're lightly toasted. So it's like a much more subtle, nuanced whiskey.
Okay.
Okay, so this is Oak Cross.
Yeah, yeah.
What were you saying?
No, the label design is just insane.
Oh, yeah. So this company called Stranger & Stranger does our label designs. They have done for quite a while. And they also do Craigellachie. I think they do Italicus. They do a couple other...
Iconic-looking,
yeah,
really
iconic,
classic
Yeah,
brands.
Exactly. I think they actually do 19 Crimes, too, which has that kind of... they're actually great on Instagram, Stranger & Stranger. If you're like a bottle... I'm like... let me think of a non-inappropriate word to describe this, but I'm like a... bottle fanatic, label fanatic.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I know what word you were thinking.
So I kind of stuck all this stuff on you know, their Instagram is great because it's all label, it's all the labels they
Stranger
do.
And Stranger.
Stranger and Stranger.
Is that what they're called?
Yeah, that's what
Instagram?
They're called. But this is relevant because we are releasing a whiskey for them because it's our, I think it's our, one of our anniversaries working with them. I think I want to say 10 years maybe. But we're releasing a whiskey called Stranger and Stranger.
As
and
a nod to them. Nice.
It's for them. They're making it. So,
Wow.
So I can only imagine what the label's going to look like. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, they do 19 Crimes.
Yeah, they do 19 Crimes, right.
So 19 Crimes, you know, they've got that,
that it's like you,
augmented reality.
Exactly. And you put your like phone on it and they move and they break out of prison. Gosh. It's really weird. Yeah. I mean, it's cool. It's cool. It's funny because I was working with a sales rep in Metro New York and he was showing me this thing and I'm like, that's such a load of bull. Like, are you kidding me? And then I was like, oh, it's Stranger and Stranger. I love it. You know, as soon as you realize it's your guys.
Who they are. You're a big fan, yeah.
So, yeah. So Oak Cross, kind of like most people eat, they're brothers. Exact same whiskey. They're both Dalhousie, Tienanique, and Kleinleash. Exact same whiskeys. They're just put in those different barrel heads
different barrel
and kept
types.
At a different alcohol.
I know a lot of people who, you know, same thing, Balvenie mix, or the Balvenie mix one.
Oh, is that is that their technical name?
Yeah, the Balvenie.
Do you know what our legal name is?
What is that?
Do you know?
I feel like if you said it, I might. I'll tell you if I don't.
It's the Compass Box Delicious Whiskey Company.
I did not know that. Yeah.
We're like legally the Compass Box Delicious Whiskey Company.
So the Balvenie makes this just one distillate. It's the exact same spirit every single time from their 50-year-old whiskey to their 12-year-old whiskey. It's just in the cask longer, different cask types. And that's part of the reason why the difference between American, where we can do a lot more with the mash bill and the distillate, our barrels are basically... much more narrow what we can do with them, which that's changed in recent years too because there's a ton of cask finishes with bourbon now, which weren't happening before. And then that's a bit controversial too because a lot of people don't consider it bourbon anymore
yep.
once it hits it, you know, so it's a whole thing. But with Scotch, you guys could have the exact same spirit, tweak little things, different barrel types, and it'd be a completely different, more complex
for us
beast.
What I mean is that it's not necessarily, I mean, it is the same distillate, but it's the same blend. So it's the same finished whiskey that we're using, like the same batch. It's just that we're extra maturing it in two different. So it's kind of like the, I used to work for Moët Hennessy for many years. It's kind of like the Glenmorangie extra matured range there.
You know Dan?
Dan who?
Dan, sorry. You're talking about Glenmorangie.
Yeah.
He's on, I'm trying to remember, is that Dan Crowell?
No. I worked for them from 2008 to 2012, so it was a while ago.
He's like their main guy for this area as well.
Oh, okay.
But he travels all over. And
I was just New York.
You guys all know each other at these shows because they're all there. He was at the social last year.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
I'm excited to do it this year.
Last year,
really? What? Yeah. Are you doing it in a different venue?
Yeah. So that venue originally told us that we had room for 1,000 people. So we thought,
it was a riot.
We thought we had room for 1,000 people, but... The dimensions they gave us and then the day that we set up, it was much smaller and more cramped than we thought. So we immediately outgrew the facility at 740 people. So this year, we found a venue, talked them out of their TABC license, like, hey, get rid of it. Like, just, you know, so they got
relinquish it. Yeah.
They got rid of it. And
you'd think maybe you're influential in some way.
No. I think it makes sense because you open a lot of these events, or and I'm not.
No, I will tell you. I'll do it. I'll tell you that it was we did an event in Texas last year, a couple events in Texas last year, where we had to buy, for a small brand like me, we had to buy our whiskey back in order to have the, you know, account, the hotel bring it in.
Yeah.
And so a $500, our whiskeys, I mean, they're not super expensive, but to do one of those shows, you want to bring 10 different expressions so folks can try it. It turns our $500 table fee or whatever into being a $3,000 event.
Right.
And I can't afford that. I'm also flying out here from Manhattan, you know, like to do this stuff. And it ends up being, I'm spending, you know, all this money on, you know, a 3-hour event. So it boxes us out of being able to participate if you're doing it at a licensed venue.
It boxes most – so there's a lot of these national events that come through, and they have a formula for these events. The problem is every state's laws are different.
Oh, yeah.
You need to be looking at each state with a new set of eyes. And the thing that everyone does here, which is changing, is they all use licensed venues.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you use a non-licensed venue, there's like a very narrow line that you have to toe to still be legal. But so I've talked some of the other events into using non-licensed. There's a Texas monthly event that happens. They've done two of them. They're only using non-licensed because I said, look, you're going to price these brands out. Fewer and fewer brands participate every year. You have to have an event that is as cheap as possible for you guys. And then, of course, now you've got a plethora of nerd items, stuff that's so much fun.
Yeah.
So interesting. I mean, like you said, you guys cover three different ranges. Your baseline, you know, your special editions, just in order to, if the event is too expensive to begin with, then less will be on the table.
It has nothing to do with wanting to do it or not wanting to do it. You know, I get a lot of folks approaching us saying, oh, well, can you do this? Can you do that? A company as small as us, we have no advertising. We don't do any advertising on purpose. We don't do any, our marketing budget is pretty non-existent. And so, you know, I literally don't have the budget to do these things, even though it would be great to be able to go to all the different markets and do all these whiskey events. So we really need to pick and choose. And at the end of the day, it could be the best whiskey event in the world, but if I have to buy all my product back instead of bringing it, and I have to then you know, fly down and put someone else up in order, you know, there's just so many factors that go into it. And we just want to be able to show people the cool stuff.
There was an event that Brian Cushing has his, he's a football player here in Houston. He had a special charity event at this place called the Bell Tower. Gorgeous venue. And we had looked at trying to help find a sponsor for a brand there. And just as an example, for Lafroy to bring their bottle in, a lot of times you guys do markouts or what do you call them, markouts through the distributor where you'll
samples.
Go with samples. You'll pull samples from a distributor.
Yep.
And the cost for that is less than what the retail at a store
would
be.
Oh, yeah. It's like 50%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for instance, a $45 retail bottle, let's say Lafroy 10, $45 for them to pull samples from a distributor.
$22.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you go through the venue,
you have to pay not only
his bottle was $100.
Yeah.
So he could have his $22 cost jumped to $100 cost for one single bottle.
So imagine a brand like ours, that's Lafroy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
So imagine us, you know, we're just this kind of tiny whiskey company that doesn't have, I mean, even our distribution, our volume are very low. I mean, you know, on purpose, we're growing at like 20% year over year, which is great. But, you know, we just don't have the wherewithal to do that, particularly if there's another event like you guys that are going to be doing it at an unlicensed venue that's going to be, you know, hitting 1,000 people, we can bring the really cool stuff.
Yeah.
You know, whereas and aside from that, there's stuff that I sometimes have in my back pocket, like, for example, you know, Phenomenology or this guy that we brought today, which we'll have to get to.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll have something like this. If it's not available for sale from the distributor, I can't show it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's we want to be able to do every event, but like that's why your event is really cool, because I can bring weird and wonderful stuff that I have in my closet.
I hope it's cool, and I want it to be cool. These events,
I can tell you're just stressed out about it already.
I'm stressed out. Yeah, every year it's like these events are incredibly expensive.
It's like giving birth, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
These events are incredibly expensive to put on. North of I won't say, but
yeah,
a lot, right? So enough to buy a new home.
A home that's filled with a lot of whiskey.
Yeah, yeah, and these events are typically marketed to the average consumer, people who maybe buy 1 to 3 bottles a month, maybe. I wanted to have an event that appeals to both the consumer, the new guy, as well as the nerd. And I like the idea of getting your Wade Woodards and your local nerd guys, your Wills, even as a
Hi, Will.
Will is a nerd at heart. Right.
Oh,
so
yeah.
He's not just doing this because it's a paycheck. He loves doing this. And for those who don't know, Will is the
national sales manager for Barrel Bourbon. Barrel Spirits,
Barrel
now they're
Spirits,
called, right?
Yeah. So
Will's my spirit animal.
Will Schragas, phenomenal guy, but he at his heart is fascinated with everything.
Spirits, wine. I mean, the guy's wine collection is just I think if I talk about his wine collection enough, maybe I'll get some bottles.
Mm-hmm.
Will, you've got a great one.
Maybe
collection.
He'll open a couple. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want it to appeal to them. So doing an event like what we're doing allows for brands to bring stuff. I don't know, how often do you get to go to Scotland to visit Compass Box?
Oh, we're based in West London.
Right.
Yeah. So
no, but I meant
the distilleries.
How long do you get to? How often do you get to go to Europe to?
Oh, a couple times a year.
Because Glenfiddich sends their brands at least once a year. Lefroy,
yeah.
Once a year. Being able to go there, pick up stuff you can't buy or sell here.
Oh, for sure.
And then serve it, you know, these one-off bottles, stuff that's no longer made anymore. We're going to be – I'm in the process – I've talked about this before. I'm trying my hardest to source a bottle of cognac from the 1800s during pre-phylloxera.
Cool.
So just like right before 1875.
Yeah, no.
Being able to taste something that – has been sitting in the bottle for 150 years is incredible.
And everyone would get to taste it?
Well, as much as
maybe
I
could you
pour
do like
out
a VIP.
So we might
something.
Do a break even where it just doesn't cost me anything. I'm not looking to make money on it, but it's never been done before, right? So being able to go to a Texas event in which you can taste something that was bottled in the bottle 150 years ago, this is a piece of history.
Yeah.
You know, would just really tickle a lot of people's, you know, nerd brain. Trying to find a
nerd brain
in a safe for work.
We're in the same boat.
But like I said, I'm glad to have you guys. I'm excited.
Well, speaking of weird and wonderful things that I would like to bring to an event that I generally can't do when it's licensed venues in this state.
Right.
What I've just put in your glass is a sample of a whiskey we released 5 years ago in 2013.
The Delilah.
Regular Delilah's. Yeah. Delilah's 20th anniversary.
Delilah's.
Well, I'm saying regular because next month we're releasing the 25th anniversary of Delilah's. So this is kind of gonna be popping back up into people's, you know, mindset. Have you had this before?
I have not. This I remember seeing it and passing on it.
Oh.
But I didn't know any better.
Sorry.
There's got to be a term for that. Whiskey regret? Where you see something on the shelf and then later you realize how rare
whiskey,
it was.
Buyer's remorse.
But it's the opposite because I didn't buy it.
Whiskey, it's non-buyer's remorse.
And it's
passer's
not,
remorse.
And it's not fear of missing out because I...
You did not
I,
fear
I,
it.
Because I already missed out on it. So it's
regret for missing out. Romo.
Whiskey regret is... whiskey buyer's regret. I don't know, man.
So the thing about this whiskey that's so cool is kind of it's our original like shot in a beer whiskey.
What do you mean?
It's have you ever been to Delilah's?
Negative.
In Chicago? Okay.
I mean, I know about it. I've never been to Chicago.
Yeah, punk. Oh, really?
Yeah.
We gotta change
They're like
that.
The Poison Girl of Chicago.
I don't know what Poison Girl is.
Oh my gosh, Poison Girl is like the dive bar here in Houston.
It's not I guess it's kind of a dive bar, but not really. It's like a rock and roll punk bar. I mean, their whiskey selection is bananas. It's their she beer did it selection. Again. Oops, you did it again. Their beer selection is wild. I mean, and you know, it's kind of that place that you go after you've, you know, gone out all night, and then you go and you just nightcap with a shot and a beer. So we created, Mike Miller's the owner, the guy that's the man with the plan at Delilah's, and he and John Glazer have been tight for many years, and they created this whiskey together to kind of be a great, you know, rock and roll nightcap whiskey that's like, you know, a shot and a beer whiskey. And the special thing about this whiskey is it's basically our Asyla that has been.
And that's going away, right?
Asyla is going away. Yeah. I mean, it's going to probably come back as like a limited edition, but we can't get it. It has like a nice chunky portion of Linkwood in there, and we can't get the Linkwood anymore. So we just can't make it anymore in its current incarnation. So rather than, you know, jack up the price and make it super impossible
rare.
To find. Yeah, we're going to kind of hold back what we can do and, you know, do something fun and weird and wonderful with it in the future and turn it into kind of like a limited edition. Okay, so no. So the limited edition Asyla is going to be something that's down the road. But so, yeah, original Delilah's was basically our Asyla, but the grain whiskey components had been extra aged in barrels that had charred new American oak heads. So you're getting this real like bourbony, oak,
grain
real
whiskey.
Oak on it. Yeah, it's about 50% malt, 50% grain, but you're getting this new American oak.
Which grains did you guys?
It's original is it has Cameron Bridge, Girvan. Cameron Bridge and Girvan in the original.
It's really good. Delilah was one of those ones, and I know there's a place in Houston that still has a bottle. I'm trying to remember where it was. Poison Girl, like I was saying, Poison Girl is the. It's like just like what you said. It's like that punk, but there's no band, right?
So, right. Okay.
But the bar is a real nice in an old part of Houston. Even their whiskey shelves look like they're about to fall over, but they've got one of the broadest selections of like really, really rare bourbons, old stuff. They've got stuff sitting on the shelf that was like highly collectible 5 years ago. They got some of the last Willett picks before Willett stopped. Well, they'd never really stopped, but they kind of tightened down on doing the Willett picks. But yeah, it's one of the great bars in Houston. One of the most iconic for sure. I know Reserve 101 gets all the love, but
I'm going to write that down. I misspoke, by the way. It's actually all Cameron Bridge, no Girvan in the original. So what we're doing for Delilah's 25th anniversary is that John held back a parcel of this whiskey and kept it in the barrels for an additional 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah. So so now the average age of that, so average age of original Delilah's was about 11. So young whiskey,
16,
younger.
16.
So now it's average age of 16 for that parcel. And then he added in. So basically, and then what ends up happening is that 50% of new Delilah's is sherry cask whiskey.
Wow.
And 50% of the whole bottle is 16-year-old whiskey. So
how many
quite,
bottles are we talking about being produced?
I want to say over 10,000. It's going to be kind of the size of like, I know Texas is getting 50 cases of it.
Okay. Should be easier.
Yeah, and it's also going to be cheap and cheerful. It's going to be about as far as our limited editions go. I'm not saying cheap and cheerful, you know. It's going to be about $100 on a shelf.
Yeah.
So normally when we look at a limited editions, there are upwards of 175, 200. So.
Yeah.
But this one is going to be kind of more accessible, just because it's meant to be kind of like a drink now. But imagine this whiskey with an additional 5 years of age on it, and then also 50% sherry cask whiskey on there. So I haven't tasted it yet. It's going to be really deep, but it's still going to have that really nice like kind of
it's all Christmas
structure. Yeah,
imagine all Christmas.
It's going to be cool.
All Christmas notes: those dried raisins, baked pie. We're in segment three.
This is four.
All right. So we've got two to get to, and then we've got to wrap up, and we've got about 10 minutes.
Okay.
So I want to hear more about Phenomenology. On top of being the most loud and busy label I've ever seen for a whiskey, it's one of the most gorgeous bottles. The label Stranger and Stranger. Right, Stranger and Stranger?
Yeah, yeah.
They're killing it, man.
I know. They're so good. Okay, so phenomenology, this concept of phenomenology, everyone's like, what is this? And I'll tell you, our whole team, when we were trying to get our heads around it, we would keep doing this, you know, phenomena, da 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 da, phenomena, da da da. And John Glazer, I think, like, he was ready to throw all of us out the window. He's like, you are not allowed to do that anymore. Phenomenology is basically the study of experiencing something in a vacuum, kind of just like the study of experience. And the whole concept of this whiskey is trying to draw your own interpretation of the whiskey without being influenced by other people's tasting notes.
So there's no tasting notes on the bottle?
No tasting notes on the bottle. It's just kind of like a description. And, you know, the idea was we weren't going to release the distilleries that were in there for about 6 months. I mean, you have me in front of you. I'll be able to do that at some point. But the whole idea of it was draw your own, really experience it like with a neutral palette, with like a blank canvas. And it's a, what I can tell you, or what I do tell you, is that it's 100% malt. So it's 100 blended malt, and it's some distilleries that we haven't used before. I want you to tell me what you think.
I did.
Okay. So he wrote sherry. It is 1% sherry cask.
There's a sweetness to it that reminds me of
the same thing that's the same thing that you said for Artist Blend, which has a really, really low sherry amount as well.
See, I think, and this again, I'm no expert.
You have a really nuanced palate that you can pick it up.
I disagree. I think I'm a huge peat fan, and when I had Stuart Buchanan on, he helped. So when you're learning about whiskey, there are certain things that'll be a revelation to you, something that finally clicks. And there's always this one particular note that I get with sherry it's phenolic.
Yeah.
That reminds me of smoke and peat. But so you can have a whiskey that is not peated, but still have some smokiness there, but it's from the sherry. So it's the same thing that happens with bourbon. There's this one note that I get in bottom shelf bourbon.
Uh-huh.
Across the board, no matter who's distilling it, there's this bottom shelf bourbon note. Not that it's bad, but that I notice that all of the $20 bourbons.
What is it?
It's like a nut oil, like a peanut oil.
Okay.
Like there's this, a particular oily like peanut note.
Like sesame oil, almost?
Maybe. Yeah. But it's something that's very prevalent in literally everyone, whether it's Heaven Hill, Beam. And you could still have a great bourbon, but I notice it. I don't notice it on the higher end products. I only notice it on the lower end. And we had a guy locally that did a blind tasting of.
You could pick it out of a mile
every time.
That's me. My first kind of experience with Scotch whiskey was when I was working for Ardbeg, and the first whiskey I kind of fell in love with of theirs was Air Nam Beisht, which is the 1995
Ardbeg.
Ardbeg. And for me, it tastes like Ardbeg ice cream.
I thought they did a 96 and a 98.
They might have. I don't know. But this was the first bottle. The first bottle. Like,
and
weird.
It was just awesome.
And for me, it just – and so now whenever I taste anything that has Ardbeg in it, I can pick it out in a mile, which actually is a really – and I didn't do this on purpose, but it's a really good segue to the next whiskey.
The next one, yeah.
But let me tell you first about
– There's no peat in this though, right?
There is.
Okay. All right. So maybe that might be what I was picking. I was under the impression it was not share or not peated.
Well, see, stop using your impressions.
I'm trying. Well, yeah. I'm picking up on a note, and I wondered if it was peat or sherry.
You are coming up right against why we created this whiskey.
Oh yeah.
So if you ask me, I'll tell you what it is.
All right. What is this?
Well, first tell me what your tasting note is, rather than sherry. Just, you know, like, what's the flavor?
Oh, it's no pressure, right? Well, I've been drinking
a lot of other
stuff, yeah. But I'm sober. I'm picking up on a lot of honey, a lot of Highland profile, Speyside profile.
Yeah.
You know? What's in it?
All right. First of all, my tasting note for this is those orange circus peanuts.
I don't pick up on that.
You know those candies that you get? They're like
the stuff my grandmother eats.
Yeah, like hard, but marshmallow.
Yeah,
they're marshmallow, but they're hard marshmallow. Yeah. That's my tasting note. It was almost on the finish. But basically what it is most of it is another kind of like inspirational cask for us, which was a 1996 Glenlossie. So it's a 21-year-old Glenlossie. It's about 72%.
Wow.
And it's not not sherried. It's actually ex-bourbon cask.
Bourbon imparts a lot of that sweetness, too, is mm-hmm. ex-bourbon cask.
There's some 15-year-old Tamdhu. There's Highland Park in there. We've never used Highland Park before, so this was kind of fun. So it's a 20-year-old Highland Park from 1997, just a little bit of that.
Highland Park does – their peat is very different than your typical Islay peat. It's just – I know so many people who can't stand Islay peat but love Orkney, you know, your Highland Parks, or even Scapa, if you can find the right expression.
And then
it's really good.
The remaining two is a little tiny bit of 21-year-old Talisker, and then 11-year-old Kalila. So a little bit peated.
Some Islay in there, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit peated.
More peated than I expected.
Only about 3.5%.
I was way off.
Fun though, right?
Yeah. So what's the next one? No Name. These are two latest, right?
So these are the two most recent. Well, I mean, Hedonism the Muse that we talked about earlier is the most recent one, but these two are the ones that are kind of in market right now. This is a whiskey so peated it needs no name, right? We were going to, and if my director of marketing hears me say this, hi Katie, she will
will she watch this?
She'll be angry. Well, yeah, I think that they don't. Yeah, our marketing department is all of one person,
right?
One very stressed out person.
Yeah.
Who does a really good job, as you can tell. Originally we were gonna release this with like just a plain label with no name on it or no anything on it.
Right.
But then we were concerned that folks would be calling it Compass Box Black Label, which is then possibly
tied with another brand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, so it became No Name. And these two were released together, and I always refer to them as the Jedi Knight and Darth Vader of Scotch whiskey, because they were both released in November, and it's kind of like Star Wars time, the new Star Wars.
This is Ardbeg.
Yes. Yeah. So that's what I was saying is when I tasted this, I said, oh my God, there's Ardbeg in here. And we've never used Ardbeg before, and I haven't seen any independent bottlings me on that. Yeah.
Oof.
So fun.
That is peated. That reminds me of Smokehead.
Okay.
So have you ever had Smokehead?
No.
Smokehead is Ardbeg. Unofficially, it's Ardbeg.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah. And it's $50 range. It's got a picture. It's in a black metal tube with a skull on it.
Because, like I said, maybe I'll get that same.
You're not going to – I guarantee you're going to nail it on it. I mean, you're not going to – you'll spot it right away. It's in a black metal tube with a skull on it.
Oh,
and
classy.
It's called Smoke. Yeah, okay. Super high end. About $50, but
what's that guy that does those T-shirts? The awful guy.
I don't even want to mention his name. I know who you're talking about.
Okay,
tattoo guy.
Yeah. That's exactly
something Hardy. Or
yes, Ed Hardy.
Ed Hardy.
Yeah, it's like Ed Hardy brand Scotch whiskey. I'm sure Ed Hardy has.
This is more like Sons of Anarchy.
Okay.
Skull looking.
There's a Sons of Anarchy wine now by the same people that do 19 Crimes, I think.
Pass. I was a huge Sons of Anarchy fan. They tried cigars,
let's not bastardize it.
I'm in agreement with you. But this is 100% Ardbeg.
It's not, but it's definitely Ardbeg.
Sorry,
yes.
I don't mean it's like your bananas comment. I don't mean it's 100%. I mean I can nail it. Dead giveaway.
I get this creamy note or something. All right, yeah. So the main parcel of this is 75% 14-year-old Ardbeg.
I was going to say younger Ardbeg, but not quite 10. The Smokehead's a bit more bite to it. It's got that young, youthful – I say youthful bite in Scotch, but I don't think that actually means anything. It's more of a aggressive –
astringent.
Yeah. So – but this is a little bit more softer – but mm-hmm. still very pronounced with peat and older, the longer a peated whiskey sits in a barrel, it loses its peat. So 25-year-old Ardbeg is not nearly as smoky as 15-year-old Ardbeg.
That's why this 1995 Ardbeg that I tried, that the Beast, was like, you know, not really a beast so much at all. It's like this creamy, amazing Ardbeg ice cream. Anyway.
This has more of a punch.
Oh, yeah.
Which made me think
for sure.
Teens.
Yeah,
I was thinking
for sure.
15, 16-year-old Ardbeg.
It's tempered with 15-year-old Kleinleash and 15-year-old Kalila.
Mm. I've got a bottle of both. I haven't opened either
one. It's super super drinkable.
Yeah, I'm
that
very
whiskey.
Happy with it. This is phenomenal.
Thank you.
Do you know which one has been more well received?
Higher rated
or something?
I would say I don't think,
because I don't have any complaints with either.
No,
but this
is they're
just
definitely
so
different.
In your face.
They're just two totally different expressions. So the No Name is getting a lot of pop and
a lot of talk.
Yeah, a lot of talk. And Phenomenology is great, and people when they blind taste it are blown away by it. But No Name we are seeing a good future for.
Yeah, I think when you, it's like radio host. If you have a more controversial radio host, they tend to be more viewed. As this is much more controversial, much more in your face, bold, obnoxious, in a good way.
It's also like talkable. I mean, it's definitely something like you taste it, and you. I always say like whiskey geeks will like smell something and just like look at it and then look at it again and then taste it.
Part of the reason I'm such a huge Ardbeg fan has to do with the impact it leaves in the empty glass. I've talked about this before.
Oh, yeah?
When you're done, when your glass is empty, let it dry. You know, let all the alcohols dry. Just smelling that empty glass, that vegetal peat smoke, is so beautiful. I have such a romance with like that empty glass smell. And Ardbeg is a big, impactful empty glass. Like it's just, it smells incredible.
Well, there you go.
If that made any sense at all.
It does.
So we've got to go. This is being cut for radio. So, Karen, this was incredibly fun.
So fun.
This was, I mean, I didn't expect to work through everything, but we did.
Hey.
And this was so great.
Yeah,
thanks so much for coming on.
No worries. I love it. I'll be back.